This is CliffCentral.com.
CliffCentral.com on a Thursday, the 28th of June, just after 7 o'clock. The Burning Platform. And we are mixing it up while Justice Malala is away. And we've got this morning, I'm very happy to say, the author of a book called Who Will Rule in 2019? It's by Yanyan Yuber, and he's joining us now. We're going to talk about what could happen, but we'll also talk about some of the things going on this week. There was, as Poppy already pointed out, a big fight yesterday between Mosiwa Lekota and Julius Malema in Limpopo.
Jeez.
There's so much. People are questioning whether or not Cyril has the balls to do something and to actually make a powerful leadership decision this week, because there are all kinds of things going on in the civil service. There are people talking about the national health insurance, and there are realities. There are economic realities that people are very loath to discuss, because it's much more interesting to philosophize about race or about political parties or about tweets, and none of these things really matter. The things that really matter are whether or not people are able to take home some money at the end of the month, whether they're able to feed their families, whether they're able to get to work and back home from work, and whether they can afford the electricity that Eskom keep hiking up because they can't manage their own business very well. So we'll find out all about those. The Burning Platform is brought to you, as it is every week, by Nando's, and this morning could be anywhere between lemon herb and very hot, depending on what you think of what particularly Yanyan's going to tell us. So Yanyan, your name is so good they say it twice, and he's here with us this morning.
Morning, Gareth. Thanks for having me.
Sure, man. Nice to meet you. And this is a terrific book, by the way. I saw our own Justice Malala, who's usually in the seat that you're in every week at this time, says this is a clear-eyed, evidence-driven and thrilling look at our recent political past that presents intriguing scenarios for how things will pan out in the future. This is your book, Who Will Rule in 2019. It's a very, very interesting book. I read as much of it as I could last night in preparation and hoping that we could discuss some more of it this morning. You've really gone into what it is that has made these parties rise or fall over the last couple of years, and what you think will happen, which is often a dangerous game to play, because you don't really know, even in a country like South Africa, where we do have trends that we can plot a course on. It's difficult to play the game of prediction.
Well, it's actually more projection than prediction. So, I mean, I think what you see in South African political discussion is that people share their feelings. Now, their feelings are very nice to listen to, but they don't look at the facts and the figures. And actually, quite frankly, there's a lot to go on. There's a growing corpus of facts and figures available since our democratization in 1994.
Yes.
And what I did was to basically plot those results over the years, and seeing that I could basically get very close to the results as they happened. In fact, I'm not a betting man, but some of my friends are, and some of them made some good money betting on my figures in 2016, which doesn't make me smart or anything. It's just all there, but people are too lazy to look at it, as you said.
Well, I'm curious about some of the things that you talk about in the book, and maybe we'll get into those. But this is, as always, has been a busy week in South African politics. There are a lot of things that are going on at the moment that everybody is talking about. Where do you want to even begin? Because I suppose we could start off with the ANC. They are the biggest party in South Africa. If we just look at your research into the ANC's poll numbers, and obviously there are elections coming up next year, which everybody's very interested in. But in the interim, they've had a major change in leadership. The ANC is still a divided and very factionalized party. There are still outside influences like the former president, who sit quietly in NEC meetings, intimidating other people in the meetings. Do you think that Cyril Ramaphosa has got a grip on this horse yet? Do you think he's able to command it and steer it in the direction he wants it to, or is it still very much anybody's game?
I don't think so. I don't think he has a grip on it at all. Mm-hmm. I think he made a Faustian pact, a deal with the devil. He sold his soul when he decided to get into bed with David Mabuza, the former premier of Mpumalanga.
Yes.
So when he was in power for 100 days, a lot of people were drawing rabbits out of a hat to give him marks out of 10. I heard everything from 8 upwards to 10 even, and I would say no more than 3.5. because in the end, a house must be judged on the foundation it's built upon. If you build a house upon the foundation of working with a guy like the deputy president, then I think there's a crack right through your foundation and you've got a problem. Now, why do I say that?
Because you may be being kind giving him three, because if you consider how the economy's contracted, and obviously that's not just his fault, but it's the fault of what was happening before him in the last quarter of last year. But the fact that that economy is contracted under a man who really, for many people, was the guy who would get the economy at least headed in the right direction is a very bad start.
Now, Gareth, that's the one thing I would differ with you on. I don't think the contraction of the economy happens quite in that way. I mean, it's more of a cyclical thing. So this is a bit of a Zuma hangover to some extent.
Okay.
But on the other hand, where he has done well on the economy is that all this talk of junk status has gone away a bit. That's the one thing he can immediately control. But just to get to the economy quickly, that's why you would see at the moment under Trump, who's a real idiot, In America, the economy is booming. He's basically still reaping benefits from the Obama era. The reason why the economy in the beginning of the Obama era wasn't doing well in the U.S. was the hangover from Bush. So it's the one thing I wouldn't be too harsh upon Mr. Ramaphosa on. But, Gareth, if you ever thought, why did he look as if he was reading the funeral rites when he was announcing so-called his new cabinet? Why was it moved on four times?
Because it was a compromise, and there was obviously a lot of heated debate around who should be in and who should be out, and he had to appeal to all these constituencies within a very broken ANC.
Especially the constituency out in Bombela and Nelspruit, because as we learned later on, that was the Faustian deal being put into effect. That was David Mabuza saying, no, you will not get rid of the Minister of Communications, Nomvula Mokonyane, despite what happened at Water and Sanitation. Now, this is supposedly, and a few others, Malusi Gigaba, who's still around, although that bromance with his spokesperson is gone.
Yeah,
Bata Biled Lamini, so many people. The point there is that the president supposedly has a complete prerogative to do whatever he wants when he appoints the cabinet. Well, it didn't look that way, did it now?
No, so that's not a great place for us to start with him. But let's just look at what he can do to try and get the ANC back on track. A lot of people are saying, well, you know, Jacob Zuma, we live in a personality politics world. Jacob Zuma is out of the way. A lot of people who might have voted for the EFF or the DA before because they didn't like Zuma might now go back to the ANC, and they would stick with it because Cyril's a much more moderate centrist type guy. He's not actively in bed with people who are trying to fleece the country of all of our money through the parastatals. Do you think that Cyril still has an opportunity to make that happen? And do you think he can do it in time for the elections?
Oh, by all means, he has the opportunity to make it happen, but he has to show the will. Now, he started off well, those parasitical parastatals that you were referring to. The Eskom board he started with and the Transnet board he started with, that's good. But there's so much he has not done. Basically, he has to declare war on the corruption that has come to define the ANC.
The ANC just this week said that they're shocked by corruption. Like they had no idea.
You believed them, Gareth?
Of course not. I'm shocked that the ANC are shocked that they're shocked about
corruption.
There's
a lot of shocking going on, eh?
It sounds to me like there are people who are just not paying attention, or they're misleading us on purpose.
Well, quite. And that is the problem the ANC has, and that is why, and in the book I say, look a bit more at the polling numbers and a little less at how you feel.
Okay.
A bit more at content and a little less at whatever goes up.
I like that.
As personality.
Empirical
content.
Evidence. So what are the facts and figures say?
That the ANC is not really growing in by-elections, Gauteng being the exception, but that's from going back a lot in 2016. They've grown a little bit in some by-elections, Gauteng. We haven't seen too many. But where they are bleeding, more even than the DA is bleeding in the Western Cape, is in KwaZulu-Natal, where they swing towards the IFP, which is doing a Lazarus on us, like absolutely returning from the intensive care unit of South African politics, where the IFP is growing by more than 10% per by-election. So the
wow.
Well, you must watch it in Umzumbi, in Jozini. It's there.
It's interesting. How many seats in Parliament do the IFP have at the moment?
10.
10.
2.5%, down from 10.5% at their height.
And these by-elections seem to show that they are making a comeback. Do you think in national elections they can go up by as little as 2-3% or as much as 5-7%?
We're not sure. We haven't had enough by-elections in urban areas in KZN to make a complete call. But you know what happened last year in the by-elections in Ngutu, which is a little hamlet between, basically where Blood River starts and where Vryheid starts, between the two of them, the Abakulusi municipality and the Meni municipality in between, is the little hamlet of Ngutu, where my former colleague said, you know, the ANC went to a stick fight with a bazooka and still lost. The IFP unseated them easily in Ngutu, and that is what we're seeing across KZN.
See, I thought the most embarrassing thing that's happened in KZN to the ANC was when they lost Gandla to the IFP, but this is obviously a sign of many other areas in rural KZN, which the ANC thought they'd tied up.
They had it tied up. But Nkandla just brought to me the best meme of the whole election 2016. Don't know if you saw it. He was voting. It was a picture of Zuma standing in line with a group of Zulu matriarchs who seemed very friendly and whatever. But the meme said, queued with him, didn't vote for him.
Oh.
All right, so that's a hell of a story. I mean, I don't know that anybody's brought that up before on the Burning Platform. It's quite useful information. What other trends are you seeing in terms of the ANC's either gains or losses? You mentioned in Gauteng they've managed to claw back some of the by-election results. Now, that surprises me because in the Gauteng ANC we've had some not particularly good news. David Makuru has been dealing with the Life Estimani situation. It seems to me that the municipalities themselves are very much swung away from the ANC. So how is it that they managed to get some feet back?
Some traction.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
in their camp.
Well, to the extent that you can have regionalized voting, and the ANC did better in the Eastern Cape when Thabo Mbeki was president than under Zuma, and did better in KZN when Zuma was president. I mean, Cyril Ramaphosa, much as people might say his roots are in Limpopo, they're not. He actually grew up here in Gauteng.
You think it's maybe a little tribalism?
No, I wouldn't go that far. No, tribalism in Gauteng won't get you far. It's too mixed up. But I think it's a bit of regionalism. So, so I think he appeals to the black middle class and the aspiring black middle class in Gauteng. The problem for Mr. Ramaphosa is that he has basically lost control of 3 or 4 out of his 9 provinces in the Free State. It's very clear that although Ace Magashule is gone, he still controls the ANC there. Same for Supra Mahomapelu in Northwest. Mpumalanga, that's where
David
we want
Makura,
to have a
right?
And KZN, who can't even get a provincial congress together in Mpangeni. So,
that's 4 provinces.
That's a lot. So that's why I would say the prognosis for the ANC is not great. However, Bill Clinton always said in politics, compared to what? Compared to what in the opposition parties is the question. The only opposition party that seems to have their act together is the IFP. If you look at what's happening in the DA, I mean, they are basically asking people in triplicate not to vote for them. And as far as the EFF goes, come on, did you see
all right,
them?
Well, let's talk to them because they've faced this this Patricia de Lille saga, which has been very damaging to them. They've also had to deal with Musi Maimane coming out on the wrong side of many issues, and of course the fact that people still don't know who's really in charge in the DA, whether it's James Self, whether it's Musi Maimane, whether it's Phumzile
Van Dam.
Nobody really knows what's going on there. What do you think's going on? What are the facts? Don't tell us your feelings.
No, we're not here for feelings. No, the facts are the following, that they have been falling in the Western Cape, which is a reservoir of DA support where they actually don't have to work for it. 2016 made no effort. They're now sitting in a complete and utter mess, which the Western Cape people, which are always ahead
and
of the
water
others.
Crisis, even though it's God's fault, people didn't stop going to church. They're going to stop voting for DA, right?
Well, I've always said, whatever you may think of the mayor of Cape Town, she can't make rain, you know.
Yeah. So, but people will take it out on the DA.
We'll see. I don't know about that. I think it's been something for people to claw at. Where the DA's problems, you know, it's easy if you're the DA to blame your reversals on the drought. But when you lose 23% of your vote in Brackenfell, which is wall-to-wall DA supportive, when you lose 17% in Saldanha, 12% in George, then that's where they are. Look at those by-elections.
They're shitting bricks.
Friend? That's gospel truth. Except to some extent they're not. You know, they are sort of just, I don't know, bumbling along. If you look but Gareth, look at what they did yesterday. They lose a hell of a court case. Their whole Federal Legal Commission shouldn't exist. And they just go on and still attack the mayor. They should be extending their hand of friendship, really.
So in other words, there's just they don't know their backside from their elbow at the moment.
Okay,
they need some strategy. They need someone. Don't they wish they still had Helen Ziller, colonial tweets and all? Because at least she managed to keep the party together.
They still have Helen Ziller. Who they don't have is Ryan Kutsia. They need strategy. You said the S word. Strategy. They're very good at tactics. What I know your knowledge of Afrikaans is very good. And Jan Rabie said the definition of life is ono beweging geraas maak. Just keep moving and making noise, then you're alive. They're very good at moving and making noise.
Uh-huh.
But there's no strategy. So they're missing Ryan Kutsia more than Helen Ziller.
And the people are getting a little annoyed at the DA.
Well, the Western Cape people are. The further you move away from the Western Cape, the less the Patricia, the little impact is. In your own area in Tshwane, there was a by-election in the eastern suburbs of Tshwane the other day where the DA went up from 91 to 94. So that's the Lardus Park, Wingate Park, that area
just to the other side of the highway
from Watercliff.
Yep.
So it's happening. And here in Joburg, we had one in Linksfield, one in Roodepoort, where they also went up a bit.
Oh.
So, but it's in their heartland. But their Western Cape heartland is saying, we don't know whether we like you anymore.
Do you think, based on the figures that you've been looking at, that the DA will have to... I mean, do you think they'll lose enough votes in the Western Cape for them to fall out of government there? That's a lot of votes that they'd have to lose.
Not that much. It's 12%. They're averaging about 11 at the moment losing. But we have to see what happens. Look, I mean, they're unlikely to lose that sort of votes in the southern suburbs, the English white areas of Cape Town. The Afrikaans people are fed up with them because of the anger about the Dalil issue and a few other things. Remember, I mean, if I ask you, who is the Afrikaans-speaking member, because she's now still a member of the DA, the Afrikaans-speaking member with the highest profile?
Crickets. I have no
Patricia
idea.
Patricia Dalil, surely.
Oh, okay.
And they're attacking, idiots. I mean, they should be extending taking the hand that she has extended and making a plan.
Yeah.
But luckily for them, the ANC in the Western Cape is even worse, and the EFF almost doesn't exist there. I mean, the EFF... Well, I mean, the ANC in the Western Cape physically assaults each other in KZN, they're murdering each other. I mean, the bar isn't very high. So, as far as the EFF goes in the Western Cape, they don't exist.
Okay, the rest of the country for the EFF, because you know, the Julius is really scrambling to try and get some populism and some noise around his party. His big enemy, Jacob Zuma, is gone now, so he needs to have some new scapegoat to make his electorate, his core audience, believe he's imperiled by. He's, you know, talking about land now. How's that working?
We'll see, but it's not working very well if you look at the by-election results, which is, I mean, I say if you want to measure voting, go to where the people vote. You know?
Yeah.
So where the EFF does well is in the interior. They don't do well in any of the coastal provinces. You know, the other day there was a by-election in that very municipality you were referring to, in Nkanda. Do you know how many votes they got? IFP got about 1,100. The ANC got about 800. The EFF got four.
Four votes. All of Nkandla.
They stood in George.
And they were all from that one house that Julius had.
Yeah, that one he painted. Anyway, so no, maybe that's the way to get your votes, four at a time. Anyway, in George, he only got two votes. But in the interior, he's doing okay.
He got two votes in George.
Yeah, well, that's the wealthy part of George, so it's not really his area. Yeah. But anyway,
two socialists among the wealthy people of
George.
Well,
it's the candidate and the candidates, whatever, husband or wife. That's not so good.
That is embarrassing.
Isn't it? Anyway, you should ask him about it, like, where the votes, friend? Anyway, but in the internal areas, or the areas that do not border the sea, he's doing much better.
Northwest, Free State, how's he doing in Gauteng?
In Gauteng, he's doing well. They are growing in Gauteng. He's doing well wherever there is an urbanized class, wherever there are mine workers, and then he's doing well in Limpopo. Okay. Which is where he's from.
So Limpopo at the moment is where there's quite a lot of noise. He and Mosiro Lakota got into some arguments yesterday. And that's also where the land hearings are taking place. Do you think that that's going to have an impact long term?
I hope so. As you said, they're searching for an enemy. They're finding it among the Indian people of our country and the other vulnerable groupings. And they hope that they will win on land. Now, they went to Springbok in the Northern Cape. And
who
people,
are the Indians voting for in KZN and Gauteng at the moment?
They're voting DA by a margin of about 70-75%.
Wow.
But that's very small voting public. As far as the EFF goes, at this stage they should find another enemy, not themselves. At the moment it looks as if they're fighting with each other. At the moment they can't find anyone to fight with. And I think that our electoral history shows that people in South Africa actually in the end want this country to work. And they don't really reply very well or react very well to people who just want to sow hatred. So there was a press conference where Julius said in June that the EFF would be focusing on legislation, parliament, and putting out better proposals than their opponents. I would strongly advise them to do exactly that so that people don't think they're as juvenile delinquent as they seem.
Well, you've covered parliament for years, since 2001, so you've been in parliament, you've seen how it all unfolds, you've done this for various platforms and publications. You were a political editor at the Burger, Beeld and Report and deputy political editor of the Sunday Times for some time. You've lectured journalism. You're often called in for political analysis. And when you're not keeping a close eye on politicians, you review books. You act as a panelist in the Journalism Awards. When you go to Parliament now, isn't it more exciting and interesting than it's ever been?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, especially if you're a fan of either WWF or boxing. No, this is what we owe the EFF, you know. They've really moved Parliament to where it should have been. You know, it was such a dear old grouping. No one took any notice. Everyone said, and that was nonsense at the time, still is nonsense, that the only politics that matters is in the tripartite alliance. Nonsense. So what we have now is Parliament is where it should be, which is at the center of the nation's political life.
Well, that's interesting, because also you could argue that all three of our branches have come into much sharper focus in the last while. The executive is suddenly being looked at in a very critical way, which it certainly wasn't under the Zuma administration.
Absolutely.
It was a battle for the lowest hanging fruit there, really. Someone like Aaron Motsoaledi, who looked like a good minister under Jacob Zuma, looks like a terrible minister under Cyril Ramaphosa. And people are saying that this NHI is pie in the sky. Cyril yesterday made some comments about how the NHI is going to be implemented whether people like it or not.
It sounds a little bit like the ETOLs, doesn't it? Wasn't that the exact words of Jimmy Manye?
Well, I think so.
So it was.
What chances do they have of forcing this to be implemented?
Look, they can force it to be implemented, but they can't force it to work. I don't think that the government has the ability to make it work. If I were Dr. Motsoaledi, I would focus on my primary task, which is to make the state hospitals run. That's bad enough. I wouldn't try anything new right now. Look, we're only at the beginning of the process. And I think that that will be debated, and that I absolutely hope that it's not implemented. I think it will be a bad idea.
In all of your experience since you started reporting on you know, Parliament, on government, on the executive, have you ever seen an example of something where the state did it better than the private sector? Any, just one shining example, just one small thing that we could say, well, the government handled this better than a private company could ever do, or the citizens, if they were mobilized together, could ever do, civic society, all of that stuff. Is there a single example?
Gareth, that's such a key question. What a good one. I ask it many, many times in
just
the
book. Just one. Because
maybe people
like me would be more open to the idea of the NHI or any such thing.
And then the world would be a better place. No, the thing is that I say in the book that if anyone can give me one example, just one, I'm with you there. That'd be great. And that's the problem with EFF policy. You know, they say that everything will be run by the state. What on earth do they base this great belief on the in the South African state on? So no, I'm unfortunately with you, and it's such a key question. And in the book, I refer to it like maybe 10 times, that that no, it doesn't. There's no example.
It seems all three of the major parties, the ANC, the DA, and the EFF, all three of them are fairly statist. They believe that somehow government just can figure out the machinery a little better and press the right buttons and pull the right levers, and they'll be able to deliver a better job in terms of not only running the country, but also providing other people with opportunities, people who are not necessarily in the government.
Well, the DA less so, I'd say. The other two, yes. I think you can draw quite a sharp dividing line between the major parties there, that the EFF, the ANC, the UDM, and the very small leftist parties, the ZAPO, PAC, those ones, really minuscule parties, they believe in statist solutions, whereas the DA, the IFP, the ACDP, the Freedom Front, those are on the other side. That's the great dividing line, and that's the problem if you're looking at coalitions for next year on a practical level, is the lack of policy overlap between the EFF and the rest of the large opposition parties.
All right, so let's get to the stuff that everybody wants to know. And I'm not going to pricey your book because it's worth reading from cover to cover, but a lot of people will want to jump straight to the conclusion, which is, how does 2019 play out according to, again, not your feelings, but the facts?
Yes. Now, some people say, what a stupid title for a book. It's an answer which
who
only...
Who said that to you?
A few people at book launches. They say, look, the answer is only three letters long, ANC, okay, yeah. Will win in 2019. I'd say no, don't speak too soon. It might well be, and it has been since 94. But many people didn't predict the 2016 results, no. Which saw... well, it was very easy to predict. I mean, I did. And the point is, you just check, I say in the book how you do it in the second chapter, and then we do it in the
end. Even politicians believe a lot of this is magic, and that there's fairy dust that gets sprinkled in certain places.
They wouldn't they? Then they don't have to think. The thing with politicians is that they believe in themselves to a remarkable degree, you know. Maybe more than you and I do, and the voters do. In the end, that decision lies with 26 million South African voters, and however many of them vote. And each of them get up from wherever they live, and they decide or not to go to the polling station on the day, and they take that decision, not the politicians. Now, it's very lazy for the politicians to say it just happens, because that means they have to do nothing. That is not true. What we need in our country, and what we have more and more, especially in the urban areas, and we're seeing it in the by-elections, we're seeing it in the election results, the actual ones, is that we need to keep these people to account. We should not give our votes away cheaply. You should have a good look. You should decide, who do I believe in? Not who did my parents vote for, or I don't really know.
I don't love any of these parties. I can tell you right now, there is not one of them that appeals to me in any which way. They're all about as ugly as each other. It's like looking at fat, naked people.
I'll leave that to your greater experience of fat, naked people. But no, the thing is,
so why would I be motivated to vote? I mean, what's in it for me? None of these parties are representative of me. I think taxation is theft. I like the idea of a smaller government. None of them are proposing
that. You like Trump, eh?
Well, I like him more than what we've got. I really do.
You should see someone, eh? No, the thing is, you take whoever is best.
I can handle the porn stars and the growing economy. Thank you very much.
You do that. The point is, you're not going to get Trump. So now you look at what you have, and like a good adult South African, you take the best of the options available. But the point is, you take a good look, and you also take cognizance of what's happening. Will, in the end, opposition parties band together to at least stop the corruption? I mean, that would be a good start, would it not?
Yeah, I mean, do you think it's possible? Coalitions.
Very possible.
Let's talk about these coalitions.
Very possible.
I interviewed an author of a book just a little while ago called Coalition Country, which...
Yes, Leon Schreiber, good friend of mine, yeah.
And you and Leon have both got these excellent books out at the same time. He's talking about how these coalitions might be put together. Do you think that coalitions between parties where there's such an ideological difference, you already hinted at this about the statist thing, can make the coalition last long enough to actually govern effectively?
I think so, yes. In the end, in politics, it's a play between the personal and the political. Mm-hmm. So what one should be seeing, and this is what would worry me were I an opposition supporter and were I to believe that maybe Trump is a better option than Ramaphosa, as you do, then
don't put words in my mouth.
I would, though. Anyway, the point is, you'd say you'd rather take him, eh?
No, so I would like a smaller government, and I would like to have less of a predatory state when it comes to the way that they strip out value from the people who could create work in this country, and also how they waste money that is already in the treasury. Well, I think that's just practical.
Well, that last point I think no one can argue with.
Well, there seem to be people who are arguing for it.
I hope not.
In politics,
well, certainly in practice. Yeah. So let's give you that absolutely.
Sure.
And let's say that Gareth's looking very, very upset with me at the moment.
Well, I mean, you told me that I like Trump. People
well,
get upset. By
you
that.
Walked into it. Anyway, the thing is that in the end, what you also need is some sort of personal get together by people who need to work together. So at the moment, what I'm missing is people with the ability to reach out from this sort of silo-like thinking within our political parties, where they only speak in the echo chamber, they only talk to themselves, they speak louder and louder, they go madder and madder. Mm-hmm. They should be looking at options. And what I miss from all sides, from the ANC, from opposition parties, is that they reach out towards each other to see on a policy level how they can govern us better. Now, after the election, they only have about 10 days to put together a government, and they're all tired, they're all angry with each other, and they're all desperate. It's not the best time to argue. So if I were to give them any advice, I'd say speak to each other now, find the places where you overlap. We all know that in Johannesburg, Tshwane, and about 30 municipalities countrywide, people have put together a sort of post-ideological anti-corruption coalition, which I think is not a bad thing.
Is it working in places like Tshwane?
Looks like it. I mean, I don't come here often. I live in the Republic of Western Cape. But the thing is,
aren't you guys going to secede at some point?
I hope not. It'll be very boring. Also, we don't have the economy to do it. People like it, but to some degree we have. You know, we've got the Karoo as a buffer zone. So keep you guys up in the north.
All right, I got you.
No, so, I'm kidding.
So
I think
it is working, and these coalitions can have a positive effect.
The thing when you have, as you said, a predatory state, is that you have to break the snowball effect. Mm. That anything you do where at least you get new people in breaks the snowball effect. And I think that might be something to look at. But at the moment, what's lacking is the leadership across all levels to actually put their egos aside, their silo mentality aside, and reach across to each other and say, this is where we can work together, this is where we can't, and give us as the voters a more informed choice.
Well, it's a fascinating book. I congratulate you on putting it together. Who Will Rule in 2019? Jan Hubert, thank you very much for joining us this morning. And thank you for being part of the Burning Platform today.
Thank you, Gareth.
Always exciting. We'll have you again. You've got people all fired up.
Good.
A lot of people saying that you're unpacking the internal issues in the ANC. Some people saying this is fascinating. This guy knows his stuff in terms of the facts and the figures, which is precisely what you were talking about. And if you want to find out more, you should get his book. All right? So go out and buy it today and educate yourself. Stop telling people how you feel and start looking at the facts. That's very good advice, just generally.
Thank you.
I like that a lot. All right. Thank you very much, Jan.
This is CliffCentral.com.